I'm your number one fan.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
My mom and dad are me.
Hi.
Hi, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday indeed. My eyes are watering.
Yeah, we're sleepy girls today. We're yawning.
Well, also, I mean, I just put eucalyptus hand sanitizer on and then covered my mouth.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
To yawn and then, yeah. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Nice, nice.
Well, welcome back to Killer Cuties Podcast.
Yeah, that's us. Mm-hmm. We're your hosts. I'm Cassidy.
And I'm KD.
Oh, brother.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about Death of a Unicorn.
We are.
But first, news. Horror news. It's me first. I go first. Okay. We're starting now. We got a trailer for Jordan Peele produced Him at CinemaCon. And by we, I don't mean you and I because we weren't there. But people did get to watch it. The Hollywood Reporter reported... weird that the footage is full of references to injury and danger, whatever that means, and Marlon Wayans in the announcement of the trailer, the, you know what I'm saying, said that the film burrows under the skin. His character in the trailer says, "You have to ask yourself, what am I willing to sacrifice?" So people are thinking it's body horror of some kind, and the poster that they released is a football with like staples and blood. So they're like, maybe it's a skin football. But that seems too obvious to me, personally. Anyway.
Yeah.
The movie comes out on September 19th. And contrary to what literally everyone on TikTok is saying, Jordan Peele did not write or direct this. It is not his movie. He's just producing, which could literally mean nothing. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
His next directorial project is through Universal and doesn't have a name yet. It's slated for October 23rd of next year, 2026.
Do we know, is he, I don't think it's his fourth project because that was already announced, but I know recently we got news that he's doing a remake of The People Under the Stairs. And I can't remember if he's just producing that or directing it.
When does it come out? October 23rd of next year, 2026?
No, I don't think so, because it wasn't that long ago that it was. Oh, maybe it was. Maybe never mind. It was almost a year ago that they announced it.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways.
He's up to stuff. He's doing things.
Hopefully multiple Jordan Peele projects is what we can look forward to.
Yeah, but this one, can't really call it a Jordan Peele project because he's just producing. I mean, he has a hand in it.
Yeah, it's, I think, not it's like, still... it's obviously a project he believes in, so that says something, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, first news for me. It's not even new. I don't even have news, if I'm being honest.
Oh, good.
It's a slow news day. Did you know that American Horror Story was still going? Because I didn't. I thought they were just done with that. They're not.
Yes, I did know that.
Yeah, I guess it was just me. But apparently after 1984's success, they got renewed for 3 seasons.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That was successful?
And 1984 was. Yeah, people liked that one. I actually did watch that one, and I didn't mind it.
Interesting.
But yeah, so then they did NYC and then Delicate, which is the newest one, and then now the 13th one is like the last one that they were renewed for. So it could be the last season. Who's to say? Not me. Ryan Murphy and the network. That's who gets to say. Anyways,
Delicate,
we don't know.
The one with What's-Her-Face and Kim Kardashian?
Yes.
Okay, I did watch part of that.
Okay, I watched like 2 episodes because my sister was like, this looks fun and Kim K's in it. And I was like, I don't care. Yeah. Anyways. But yeah, we don't know the theme yet. We really don't know much about it at all, except that Ryan Murphy has revealed to Variety that he was talking to Sarah Paulson and Evan Peters about the new season. Not confirmation that they're going to be a part of it, but I'm sure fans are going to speculate that they are. Jessica Lange recently was in an interview where someone asked her about it, and she said, hell no. So who's to say?
Interesting.
Yeah, but I'm sure people who have stuck around with it for this long would be excited to have them back, because I don't think that they've been in the newest seasons.
At least not in the 2 episodes that I watched of Delicate.
Yeah, I didn't recognize them either. And I don't think either of them were in 84, which is the only other like recent one I've seen.
What's her face was in it though? The Robertson. Emma Roberts.
Emma Roberts? Yeah. Well, that's who was in Delicate.
Yeah. That's not who I was talking about when I said what's her name in Kim Kardashian. I was thinking of the other girl.
I only knew that those two were in it. Who's the other girl? Okay.
She might not even be in it. I could be making it up entirely. Okay. God, what's her name? I really like her house. Her house was on an episode of AD. Cara Delevingne. Oh. Isn't she in it? Or did I make that up?
I don't know.
Yes.
She was in Delicate?
Yes.
Okay.
She plays a character called Ivy.
Oh, Ivy. Mm-hmm. Wait, I think I do remember her in it. I'm getting flashbacks. Anyways, somebody tell me which seasons are worth it to watch because I don't want to watch all of them. If it's none of them, that's fine too.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, Coven. I've already seen like Coven. 1 through 4.
Yeah. 1 through Coven.
That's 1 through 3. I did watch 4. Would not recommend. I hated it. I thought it was terrible.
Oh, wait. Is 4, what's it called? Freak Show?
Yes.
I didn't mind Freak Show.
That shit was terrible. They got rid of the most interesting villain in the first, like, 4 episodes. And then they had fucking Neil Patrick Harris come on for 2 filler episodes in the middle of the fucking finale. What was that about?
I hate him. I do not like Neil Patrick Harris.
I know. So I don't know why you liked that season. It was terrible.
You're right. I totally forgot that he was in it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anyways, if you love AHS, please tell me which of the later seasons I should watch.
Yeah.
If it's none of them, that's fine too.
Yes. Okay, well, in happier news, better news, or actual news, Vera Farmiga is releasing her debut psych metal album.
Yeah.
We know her from The Conjuring and the newer age Godzilla movies, obviously. But now she's the front woman of a band called The Yagas, and their first ever album is releasing on April 25th. It's a 10-song album called Midnight Minuet, and they just released the song Life of a Widow. It's pretty good, kind of slow. Vera described it as lamenting, which I definitely agree with. She's Walking Down was also released. It has a really sick classic metal guitar backing. And then The Crying Room, which has almost 1.5 million streams on Spotify alone. It's been out for like 4 or 5 months, maybe even longer. That one feels very divorced dad rock, and I'm super into it.
Oh, yeah, you love that genre.
I do love divorced dad rock. The cover art is also stunning. I can see people getting that tattooed on them as like an adjacent homage to The Conjuring. They could even like sort of tweak it and it would be The Conjuring. I don't know. It's really cool.
Okay.
And I guess, just fun fact, she and the other 4 band members met at Rock Academy's adult program. That's Woodstock's rock and roll school. And wow. They just loved working together and now they're a band.
How cute.
Yeah, so fun.
Love that.
Yeah, me too. Good for her, a little side quest. Fun side quest. And she's pretty good at it. Her singing's very good. I kind of wish she would have been the front man of the new Linkin Park. I think she'd have been good at it.
Love that.
Yeah.
All right. Last kind of news from me. The first full trailer for Megan 2.0 has been released. We will link it in the description. It's very clear that they are going to be leaning much more into the comedy and action than the horror. Which, I believe in our episode on Megan like 2 years ago, I said that they needed to lean more into either the comedy or the horror. So it sounds like they've chosen, and they've chosen the comedy and the action. Everybody in the comments is comparing it to the Terminator series because it feels like that, where they're going full sci-fi action. Mm-hmm. But people seem excited, so that's cool.
I was watching, I don't even remember what the TikTok was, but it was about Megan, obviously, and one of the top comments was, who's asking for more Megan movies? Which is, like, honestly, like, who talks about Megan?
What's funny is that, like, it feels, I do think when it came out, like, there was hype around it. People loved Megan when it came out.
Yeah.
But then I feel like some of it was just kind of artificial from Universal, because they're like, oh, Megan's going to be at Horror Nights every year since she came out. And like, they're pushing Megan on us. And I'm like, it's fine. But I didn't think the movie was that good.
was fun. It was fun. It was a good time. It was a
fine movie. Do I think it's... You know what? Maybe I shouldn't judge until Megan 2.0 comes out. Maybe it'll be the best movie I've ever seen, and I'll be so happy that they continued the Megan saga.
Maybe. We won't be watching it because it's not a horror movie.
I'll watch it on my own time. We won't be talking about it if it's not a horror movie. But yeah, I'll give it a go. Sure. Okay, I'll give Megan 2.0 a chance.
I mean, we kind of had to have known that it wasn't going to be horror when they released the teaser during the Super Bowl.
I feel like that doesn't really
more of a family-friendly event.
I don't think it's going to be family-friendly.
No. I just mean that horror trailers generally don't play during the Super Bowl because they're scary.
Yeah, true. But like a horror comedy might. So that's like, I guess. That's fine. But it seems like they're kind of just going more towards that, which is fine. Like, I feel like it makes sense for the premise.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. A funny doll horror movie.
Chucky.
Yeah, I was going to say Child's Play. I literally made Cassidy take that off our list. I didn't want
to
watch it.
Yeah, you did, which is crazy to me. I don't know why.
He doesn't do it for me. I don't know.
But you don't know because you haven't seen it.
I know, but I know somebody that really likes him, and I don't like that person. So it's like little, you know?
I guess, yeah.
Anyway, maybe someday. But right now, we're talking about
definitely someday.
Death of the Unicorn. Well, yeah, eventually. We're going to talk about Death of the Unicorn. I just have one more tiny news before I get into a summary of Death of the Unicorn. And it's more of a call out than a news. Screamboat, the Steamboat Willie horror comedy that came out last week, actually has pretty decent Rotten Tomato reviews. I'm extremely surprised. It has 61% critics out of 18 reviews and 64% audience with over 100 reviews. I'm genuinely shocked.
That doesn't surprise me.
Why?
Because I think that the people who are going to see Screamboat and reviewing it the first weekend it's out are people who are interested in that type of thing. You know what I mean?
I guess that's true. That's true.
And it's only 18 critics. So clearly it's people who like wanted to go see this.
Yeah, that's fair. William Bibbiani from The Wrap said, if we absolutely must have low budget spree killer movies starring classic cartoon icons, I hope they are at least as good as Screamboat.
See, like that feels like a almost backhanded compliment.
It is, absolutely, a backhanded compliment, which is why it's only a 61% and not a 90%.
Yeah, for sure. That's fair. Maybe it's really good. I don't know. I haven't seen it, so.
Yeah, I didn't plan on watching it at all, but now I kind of want to. Especially if it would redeem What's-His-Face for me after he was in...
David Howard Thornton.
Yes.
Yeah. See, I like him.
Yeah, I don't mind him so much, I guess.
No qualms with him. I think he's fun. And I think he does a great Art the Clown. I just don't like Terrifier.
Yeah.
I just don't want to watch the movies he's in.
Yeah.
But I keep doing it for some reason.
Anyway. Okay. Well, we're here to talk about our latest new movie release, Death of a Unicorn. This is A24's latest horror entry, directed by Alex Sharpman. And starring Jenna Ortega, Paul Rudd, Will Poulter, Anthony Carrigan, and Tay Leone. It's about a lawyer and his daughter who hit a real-life unicorn with their car on the way to a business meeting, where they discover the healing properties of the unicorn's blood, flesh, and horn. The man's boss tries to exploit the creature's curative powers with horrific results. And that summary is adapted from Google. Thanks, Google. A24 was working with a $15 million budget and had a slow couple weekends, the last two weekends, making back only $6.5 million so far. Audiences aren't super impressed. It's got a 6.4 out of 10 on IMDb, a 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd, and a 54% critics and 78% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. So pretty average overall, but...
I'd say that's a good audience score, 78%.
On Rotten Tomatoes, but Letterboxd is a 60% technically, and IMDb is a 64%.
Yeah, I would take IMDb over Letterboxd in terms of like normal audience scores, because Letterboxd is kind of full of like pretentious people.
That's fair. That's fair.
That's kind of the whole point of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's as someone who has a Letterboxd account and uses it all the time.
Yeah. Anyway, what we actually care about is what we thought of the movie.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Yeah. And if you're here, that's all you care about too, I hope. We're going
to
tell you.
I'm just listening to see if like we think the same thing as you, you know? Because yeah. your opinion should be the only thing that matters. And you're just listening to us because sometimes we agree with you. That's the only reason to like critics. That's why everybody I follow on Letterboxd, I only did because they liked the same things I liked sometimes.
Yeah, there's that trust factor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And every once in a while, they lead me astray. And I think, you're on thin ice.
Yep.
They pull me back in.
I saw this movie today, and also today I learned that Eyebrow Kid is English.
Yeah, Will Poulter.
Yeah, I had no idea he was English.
Oh, he is, yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I remember him from is We're the Millers.
Mm-hmm.
A very good movie. And Maze Runner.
Mm-hmm.
In both of which he has an American accent.
He does. I honestly think I knew that No. Was it Chronicles of Narnia? Wasn't he in one of the Chronicles?
Oh, yeah, you're so right. He totally was.
Yeah.
He's in Prince of Persia. Not Prince of Persia. Prince Caspian, I think. Mm.
I don't think that that's how I knew, though. But I think I knew because when Maze Runner came out, one thing about me is that I fucking love Dylan O'Brien.
Yeah.
He is white boy of every year for me, personally. But anyway, so I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, Maze Runner, let's go. And I just remember reading that like half the cast was English, but only Thomas Brody Sangster got to keep his accent. So everybody was like mad at him because they had to do American accents and he didn't. So
cute.
I think that's where that knowledge came from.
So fun.
Yeah. But you've also seen him in another movie that we talked about, Midsommar.
Oh my god, you're so right. And he has an American accent in that too.
He does. Yeah. He does it really well.
Yeah, he honestly, second only to Dr. House.
Hugh Lowry. Yeah,
Hugh exactly. Lowry. I couldn't think of his last name. I knew his first name was Hugh.
We're on a first name basis.
Yeah.
Us and Hugh.
Yeah. And speaking of Hugh, he has a very successful musical career. I've seen him in concert.
Hmm.
He's great. He's a pianist.
Oh, I love that.
Jazz pianist.
That checks out. He played piano on House a lot.
Yeah. He actually is a musician. They put that in there because he is a musician.
Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it time for an annual House rewatch? I think so.
We should.
Mm-mm. You need to finish Buffy first. You need to
finish Buffy. Yeah.
Don't ever do that to me. Oh, shit.
I do need to finish Buffy. It just yeah. it just turned into a little bit more work than I anticipated having to tandem watch it with Angel, which I am enjoying. Yeah. It's just more work than I anticipated.
Anyways, back to the movie we're here for.
Yeah.
I want more teens with acne in movies. And I'd prefer it to not be plot relevant, but I'll take what I can get. Because when they first showed her on the airplane and she had, like, little acne marks all over her face, I was mm-hmm. like, wait, I love this. I was so excited. I was like, she actually, like, kind of looks like a teenager now, you know?
Yeah.
That's fun. And then it became plot relevant, which I understand it did make sense for, you know, the movie. But I kind of wish it. She just had acne. That's fun.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, it was very noticeable. It was like, I even asked myself, what, did they put acne on? Like, why didn't they cover her acne? And then,
yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's so noticeable because we never see that in movies.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know Jenna Ortega has flawless skin.
Yeah, well, she's rich. She should.
No. Well, or she just takes care of her skin really well. You don't have to be rich to take care of your skin.
No, but when you're rich, you have access to dermatologists and skincare clinics and all that kind of stuff. That
I guess.
The best products for your skin that work the best for your skin. It's a lot easier to have nice skin. When you're rich.
Yeah. That's fair. Speaking of being rich, the steak budget for this movie must have been astronomical because Richard E. Grant ate 16 steaks while they were filming the dinner scene over one night. And he'd be eating them when the camera was off. He just kept eating them.
I'm obsessed with that.
Yeah. He was so fun. And I watched an interview with the five of them, Richard Poulter, Paul Rudd, Jenna Ortega, Richard E. Grant, Tia Leone. And they were having so much fun together. And he was hilarious.
Yeah. It reminds me of, I think it was for Easy A. There's a scene where Emma Stone's like eating food. And I think she said in a behind the scenes interview that she just was actually eating the whole time. And because it was one of her first movies. And so they were like, oh, here's your spit bucket. And she was like, this is good food. Like, I'm not going to spit it out. And she's like, after like 20 takes, I was like, I should have been spitting this out because this is too much.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Oh. I remember I was going to tell you something.
Okay. Tell me. Okay.
In our last episode, we got into a fight. One of several. about how much I really love the movie Good Luck Chuck. And I'm a Good Luck Chuck apologist. That movie is fantastic. I remember my second favorite rom-com because Tammy is in it.
Okay, great. It can't be worse than Good Luck Chuck. So what is it?
It's not. It's actually much better. It's actually, like, unironically a very good movie. And when you and I were at the Met, which we were also talking about earlier, we went to the Met. They have the, like, Egypt room, the Egyptology room, you know, that has, like, the water in it and everything. And you took my picture in there. I was pretending to be Taya Leone in that movie because she was an Egyptologist in the movie Ghost Town. She and Ricky Gervais. It's a very good movie. I love that movie. It's very good. And What's-His-Face is in it, too. I like him, too. It's like a comedy, romance. Yes.
Yeah. No, I've seen it.
Good movie.
Yeah, I don't remember not liking it. I don't think it was one that stuck with me, but...
I really like it. It's got good music. It's got good cast. It's funny. It's sad. Yeah. It's very good.
I mean, listen, at this point, I'll take anything. I'll take anything over Good Luck Chuck, so.
Fine.
Sure. I still am going to show you my favorite rom-coms so that you can be like, oh my God, wow, a good movie. Sorry.
You pick two rom-coms, I'll pick two rom-coms, and you already know what my two are, and we'll compare.
Good Luck Chuck.
You have to.
I've already seen it. Once was enough.
A long time ago, and you haven't seen it through the lens of, wow, my best friend KD really likes this movie. I should approach it differently.
I don't want to watch Dane Cook have sex with, like, 20 different women. Like, that's not on my list of things I want to watch.
You don't even have to watch that part. It's implied.
I don't want to watch any of it, Katie. Let's talk about this movie.
Well, I can tie it back. Taya Leone said that she accepted this movie based on the name alone. She said, when you get a script called Death of a Unicorn, you sign up for it. And she was valid. Great.
Yeah, she did a fine job. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody did, like, a bad job.
No, not at all. I didn't really have any sort of attachment with the, like, guard woman.
I don't remember her name. But she was just there to be killed off, you know?
Yeah, but so were the doctors, but I liked both of them.
Yeah.
All of the family. The whole family was.
I think Will Poulter and Anthony Carrigan, who played Griff, they kind of carried the whole, like, comedy aspect.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, they were the only two characters, and I was like, okay, yeah, I'll see more of them, because they're kind of funny, at least.
Yeah. Loved Anthony Carrigan. He was very good.
Yeah. Which, apparently, he watched a lot of Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin to kind of get into the whole body movement comedy instead of talking, because he doesn't talk a lot. So most of his is just silent acting.
Yeah. He does it very well.
He did.
But yeah, Will has all of the, like, zingers, for sure.
Yeah, which I kind of wanted, like, the whole family to be a little bit more over the top and funny.
Yeah.
Whereas I felt like it was just kind of him and Griff.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the main characters, Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega, like, those are, like, two, like, straight men. Like, not...
Jenna Ortega, like, and Paul
not,
Rudd?
So, like, not, like, straight men, but, like, straight men in a comedy sense. Like, they're the ones that, like, keep the straight face. Well, the person next to them makes jokes, right? Like, that's kind of their role.
Okay.
But then it was just them together.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't, you know? I don't feel like Paul Rudd's talents were really accessed, for lack of a better expression, because I am a number one Paul Rudd hater. I was before this movie. I hate him for absolutely no reason. But having watched him in, like, interviews for this, he's actually really funny and, like, very endearing and likable. So yeah. I apologize to Paul Rudd for hating you for no reason. I don't anymore.
I did always think it was crazy that you didn't Not that, like, you know, whatever, if you don't like a celebrity, you don't have to have a reason. But it was just such a random one that I was like, he seems like someone you'd like, but.
Yeah, I do. I do. I do like him. And he was way funnier in the interviews for this movie than he was in the movie. And I feel like had they let him be funnier, the whole movie would have been better.
Yeah.
Just let him do his thing. Everybody was saying how funny he was behind the scenes. Why didn't they put that into the movie?
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't as funny as it could have been, from all accounts.
Correct.
But yeah, I saw a lot of people, mainly on Letterboxd, talking about how, like, oh, he's the most unlikable he's ever been in this role. And I was like, yeah, that was the point, you guys. I don't know if you realize that. You're not supposed to like him until, like, the last 5 minutes. That's the whole point.
Yeah, it's the character arc.
Yeah, in that regards, I felt like he did a good... I think he did a good job for the role. I just wish, like... it had been funnier.
Yeah, you can be unlikable and funny.
Yeah.
Like
Will
Poulter
did it.
And Will Poulter, exactly.
Will Poulter nailed being unlikable and funny.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
He's actually really good at that. That's what he does in We're the Millers, too. He's just an annoying little punk-ass kid.
Yeah. Also unlikable in The Maze Runner. Not but very not funny, though. Not funny.
No. That movie was not funny.
But Midsommar, unlikable and kind of funny.
Yeah, you're right. You're so right.
Oh my god, that's his niche. Good for you, Will
Poulter.
Yeah, that
and eyebrows.
Yeah. Have you seen the interview he did where they asked him about that?
His eyebrows?
Well, they were like, when you Google, like, eyebrow kid, like, he shows up. And he was just like, yeah, I think that's interesting because, like, every other actor has eyebrows, too, so.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I feel like he really... glue up, you know?
Yeah.
Not that he was ever unattractive or anything, but he was also a child. He's just, he got kind of buff. He worked out.
Yeah, he did.
I'm into
he
it.
He kind of grew into his eyebrows too.
Yeah, he really
they
did.
They suit him.
Yes. And they were never bad eyebrows.
No, they were just a little much.
Yeah,
at
they
one
just
point.
Were, yeah.
And now they're great.
Yes. Yeah, I know his name. Still Google him as Eyebrow Kid.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. I have a complaint. I know I've been talking a lot.
Okay. That's okay.
I've been really heated about this one for the last 3 hours since I read it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm going to say?
Carpenter.
Yep. Okay, yeah. So John Carpenter was going to do the score of this movie, and he didn't, which is, like, fine. Whatever. But what's really pissing me off is that Alex Sharfman, who's the director of this movie, it's his directorial debut, he wrote a letter to John Carpenter asking, please, John Carpenter, my muse, my inspiration, would you do the score for my movie, my directorial debut, Death of a Unicorn? And John Carpenter said yes.
Yeah.
And Alex Sharfman, he said as production went on, the movie wanted a different sonic palette than what John does with synth guitar and drums, which is great and I love it, but the movie was asking for a more organic sound and a more varied kind of soundscape. Now, he doesn't expand on that, but John Carpenter obviously did not do the music for this film, but can you fucking imagine getting John Carpenter to commit to your movie and then being like, actually, we're going in a different direction.
No, but can I be honest?
It didn't need John Carpenter, but you don't say no to him.
Yeah, I don't think he should have ever asked John Carpenter.
Exactly.
Because this doesn't feel like a movie that should have John Carpenter's score.
No.
So I do think he did what was right for the movie. But yeah, it is crazy to be like, oh, I got John Carpenter to do my movie and then be like, never mind.
Yeah, I get it. I sort of respect the commitment to the project and your vision, but it wouldn't have made the movie worse. It just would have made it different.
Yeah. I think at one point, maybe this was a movie that could have a John Carpenter score. They've been working on this for a while.
Yeah, at least 2022.
Yeah, because that's when they sent over, I mean, before that, because 2022 is when they sent over the script to Jenna Ortega.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're sending the script to actors, it's already way past. the initial pre-production when you're writing and developing it. So Alex Sharfman said that he was inspired by other creature features that kind of have anti-capitalist messages, like Alien, Jaws, and Jurassic Park, which I think you can definitely see.
Yeah.
He knew that he wanted those themes in his unicorn movie. And he felt like unicorn lore kind of already coincided with that narrative. So he felt like that was the perfect kind of messaging. But you can definitely see the influences, even if you've just seen the trailer, that scene of like the alien, or not the alien face, the unicorn face, like yelling mm-hmm. in Jenna Ortega's face is kind of a direct homage to Alien 3 with the xenomorph and Ridley, mm-hmm. or Ripley, sorry. And then Ridley, her name is obviously Ridley Scott from the original director of Alien. I think even Jurassic Park, you can see when they're like trying to go around the car and hide from it, it kind of mimicked yep. Dr. Grant and the T-Rex. So there's a lot of little things that I see why people are comparing them, and you can definitely see the influence there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a creature feature is what it boils down to, I think, and it would be hard not to take inspiration from those movies. They're so iconic. Yeah, I mean, this really was just Jurassic Park with unicorns, personally, which is why I liked it so much.
I want to talk a little bit about costume design.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So Andrea Flesch was the costume designer for this film, and she took like pretty much direct influence from the tapestries. So she worked a lot of that into her own creation. So a lot of the textures and the patterns and the colors that were used were kind of direct reflections of those. So Jenna wearing red, that was really apparent. She's, you know, the maiden or the pure of heart maiden. Paul always wearing blue was a reflection of one of the people on the tapestries. And then the Leopold family, their entire palette was just like gold, white, and black, which were kind of all the hunters of the unicorn. Mm-hmm. And then even the scientist lab coats were kind of designed to mimic those like high collars that you see in the Middle Ages. So I thought that was all really cool.
Yeah.
And then there was another little bit I saw about the hoodie that Jenna Ortega wears, which was very cape-like. Like it was obvious, you know, very clearly an homage to the cape that the maiden is wearing. But it was mm-hmm. from a Japanese designer, and they didn't make it in red, so they had to get it custom made to be red so that it would fit the tapestry.
Fun.
I know. I love that. You don't hear a lot about like costume design in a lot of the fun facts, so I always like that.
Yeah, fun. One thing about the maiden, though, is I guess in that particular tapestry, it's called The Unicorn Surrenders to a Maiden, which is obviously a big plot point in the movie. Supposedly, the actual maiden that the unicorn is surrendering to is like off screen, for lack of a better expression. But Alex Sharfman said that that was too hard to like teach people in the film. So mm-hmm. he obviously went with like Jenna Ortega is this other maiden that is actually visible in the surviving tapestry, because the tapestries were found either during or after the French Revolution, and the theory is that they were damaged during the French Revolution. So that's why she's not exactly on screen. But anyway, fun.
Yeah. And I know he worked with a bunch of artists to kind of fill in the gap, because the one tapestry with the maiden is the most damaged, like pieces of it are missing, which they talk about mm-hmm. in the film. And so he got a bunch of artists to work together to kind of recreate that same style and expand it into what we see in the movie when they expand it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's for the movie. It's not a direct idea of what they think it was. But
yeah,
he said that was kind of fun, because then they could fill it with stuff that he wanted to put in the movie instead of stuff that might have actually been on it.
For sure. And we actually don't even know for sure what order the tapestries go in, which is super interesting. I've seen the recreation. So there's two, there's like the originals, obviously, and then there's the recreations they made in like 2001 or 2002 for Stirling Castle in Scotland. I've seen those ones. Mm. And I think they're in a different order
than the
ones at Cloisters, which is interesting.
Mm. Yeah, that is. I think he even changed the order in the movie from Cloisters. Because I think in Cloisters, it doesn't end with the red, like, the surrender scene, but he wanted that to be the last scene, so that's why he mm-hmm. put that at the end instead.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talk about practical effects in some of the video interviews I was watching. Most of the effects were practical, except obviously like the sky. But the unicorns were puppets, and the cast got to like go and visit them before they started filming and see them. And everybody was really impressed by just how well done they were. That's kind of fun.
I find that so interesting because it didn't look that way in the film, if I'm being honest.
What do you mean?
I felt like there were maybe a handful of scenes where they looked really good, mm-hmm. and the rest, I did not think they looked good.
I never thought like that the baby so looked good.
CGI to me.
Really?
Yeah.
The baby never looked good to me. The baby looked stupid and like.
Yeah, the parents definitely looked better.
Yeah.
But even sometimes, yeah, I don't know. I feel like most of the time, unless it was like a close-up, it I don't know.
Interesting. See, I thought the close-ups looked less CGI.
Yes.
Like more puppety.
And yeah, but I almost thought that looked better. Like there was more more realistic, enhanced with CGI rather than just CGI.
Interesting. Okay. And they also definitely looked better in the black than the white, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. That's why the baby looked like shit.
Yeah, honestly. Really. But no, I think it's always a feat to pull off like a big creature.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm not even blaming, I don't know. We've talked about how CGI is just getting worse. Yeah. And it's not CGI that's getting worse. It's the working conditions and the budgets and all of that. And like trying to squeeze workers for every last fucking piece that they can get.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just gave them the time and the money to do it.
Yeah.
Movies could look so fucking good right now.
Yeah. Like Transformers and Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh yeah, movies.
Peak CGI.
15, 20 years ago look better than they do today.
Yeah. First Avatar looked better than second Avatar.
I wouldn't know.
Because you haven't seen second Avatar?
I haven't seen either.
Oh, yeah.
I've told you this. I tried.
That's a crime.
I tried watching the first one like 5 times. Just couldn't get into it. I'm so sorry.
You're more of a practical effects like girly anyway, so.
I am.
I think everybody who appreciates digital effects should watch it. Because it's the masterclass. But
yeah.
Yeah, I definitely went down a rabbit hole with these tapestries.
Yeah.
Super, super interesting. They even you kind of touched on this with the comments about costume design, but even some of the shots are like directly from the tapestry. It's like one of the ones of Odell and Elliot going into the wilderness while hunting the unicorn is like taken directly from one of the tapestries. It's very cool.
Yeah, I like that. I like the inclusion of that into the lore, and
mm-hmm.
that was fun.
Yeah. I kind of wish that he had like seen these tapestries and been like, oh my God, I should make a movie out of that. But he found them in his research. He was like researching as far back as like Roman Empire.
Yeah.
Which is before the 16th century, right? How? When was the Roman Empire in comparison? It doesn't matter. Either way. And like Old Testament Bible even, like mm-hmm. way long time ago. And then he came across the tapestries and was like, I think I saw these at the cloisters. And that's what brought them into it. Interesting how ideas are developed that way.
Yeah. You'll love this, even though I'm sure you probably already know it. So Sharfman previously worked for the production company Parts and Labor Films. And while he was there, he got to watch Robert Eggers put the finishing touches on The Witch, as well as develop very early versions of the Nosferatu script.
Oh.
So, yeah. So he said that he kind of credited him for this movie because he watched how research-based Eggers is and just like how much he put into getting the lore of The Witch and even Nosferatu, like how much he actually studied that. So he was like, oh, if I'm going to do a modern monster movie, I want to do the same thing. So that's kind of what inspired him to really dig into the lore.
Interesting. I did not see that.
Oh.
That was probably one of the longer facts on IMDb that I deleted because I didn't want to read it all.
Oh my God, the IMDb facts for this are so paragraphs. Long.
Seriously.
I took all of that out of more than that. It was like a full page.
Yeah, it was like a 5-paragraph essay.
It was. And that's all you needed to know from it.
Do you remember 5-paragraph essays from school?
Yes.
I don't think they do those anymore. I don't think that's a thing. It's like not a format that people are writing essays in.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, why the fuck did you teach us all this shit? Why didn't you teach us useful knowledge? Thank God I know how to write a 5-paragraph essay.
I mean, that knowledge probably translates a lot to the fact that you're a very good writer now. You can do copywriting, you can do cover letters, you can do all of that kind of stuff. This bitch can write an email, that's for sure.
I can. I sent the best email of my life the other day. That was such a good fucking email.
That was actually, yeah, she sent it to me beforehand. It was a really good email.
No, I had already sent it. That email was sent. Anyway, don't piss me off or I'm going to send you a nasty email.
I like it.
Thank you.
I love that side of you.
Thank you. I try to lay low.
Yeah. Sometimes you can't.
Yeah. Unless you fire John Carpenter from your project, you're safe.
In general, if you fire someone that Katie loves, you're going to get the biggest rant of your life.
Honestly, that's really what it boils down to. So, Alex Sharfman, prepare for your fucking email, bitch.
Alex Sharfman's on the fucking list.
If I experience one more inconvenience from Alex Sharfman, it's fucking over.
It's over for his ass.
Oh, God, that's so funny. We joke here. We joke here.
Yeah, we have fun.
You touched on this earlier, but Jenna Ortega received a script in 2022 the weekend before Wednesday premiered. So, like, she was not anywhere near as popular as she is now. She hadn't done any of the Scream movies. Like, she was not popular yet. So they really got her on board at the right time. And Alex said that he was really glad to have her and glad that they were able to get her before she got too big to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a huge cast, so I think she would have participated either way, but
very true.
Yeah. I mean, I guess unless she was really busy, but
yeah, sometimes when it explodes like that, it's like,
yeah,
you have so many offers that it's like, what do you choose from, you know?
Yeah. That was like, oh, really sad time in my life. But a really happy time for him when Brendan Fraser kind of had his like Renaissance, whatever they called it. Mm-hmm. He was in The Whale or whatever, and people were like, justice for Brendan Fraser. We had already tickets to go and see him at like a Minnesota Comic Con, just like a little tiny thing to go and meet him and like take pictures and get a signature or whatever. Aww. And literally like the month after we bought the tickets was when he like blew up and he had to cancel. So we didn't get to go and see him.
So devastating.
Yeah, it was really sad. I was really excited to meet him. But I get it. He was busy. He was busy and working and he deserves it.
Yeah. I went to see a movie with a friend in Century City and they were doing, we were like, oh yeah, like let's meet at the theater and then, you know, we'll decide what we want to see. So we get there and they're having a showing with a Q&A with Brendan Fraser for The Whale. And we were like, oh my God, we have to do it. Sold out. Couldn't get in.
Yeah.
So sad. We were like, I mean, we knew as soon as we saw it, we're like, there's no way like day of we're going to get tickets, but
yeah.
It was still devastating to know he was in the building with us at that moment. We couldn't go.
Oh, that's fun. You never told me that. Or maybe you did and I forgot.
I probably did and you just forgot.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to hear it for the first time again.
Yeah. It is like kind of fun having you as a friend. Yeah. I can tell you any story anytime.
Yeah.
And you haven't heard it.
Yeah.
Even though you have.
Oh, funny.
Do you have any other fun facts?
No.
Okay.
Do you?
I have one last one.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, Sharfman said that when he was trying to imagine what a pure of heart maiden would look like in the year 2025, he said he started thinking it's probably some Gen Z leftist who's protesting on a campus somewhere right now. Someone with very strong morals and ideas.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
Yeah, I also love that, but the way that he worded that makes me feel like he's a righty. You know what I mean?
No, because I don't think if you're thinking a pure of heart that a right winger would be like, oh yeah, leftist.
I guess that's true. I guess that's true.
They'd but be like, oh, a follower of Christ.
Yeah. Leftist just feels like such a slur.
Oh.
Like, Republicans use that. Like, you're such a fucking leftist. You know what I mean? I just didn't like that he said that word.
That's
no
fair.
Shade. No shade.
I mean, I think it was more of just a descriptor rather than an insult.
Yeah, fair, fair, fair. But no, yeah. I do love that and agree that.
I sort of agree, but didn't Gen Z vote for Trump? So, like.
Did they?
Didn't they? I'm pretty sure more young people are Republican than. That's why they call them Zoomers.
Ew.
We're just sandwiched in between shitty generations. Sorry, Gen Z, if you're listening to this, vote better next time.
Yeah. Vote correctly next time.
Vote.
You did this to your fucking
self. Tanking the economy.
Seriously.
Anyways, I loved that because right after I went to see this movie, but before I read that fun fact, I was at a protest. So I was like, oh my God, it's me. I'm pure of heart.
Oh, funny. But you're not a Gen Z, so.
I'm not.
Are you really that pure of heart?
No. I'm this close. I'm this close to being pure of heart.
Yeah, we're not even elder millennials, are we? We're just. Like
we're young millennials.
Are we?
Yeah, we're like near the end.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Cuspers, if you will.
Yeah.
Not quite like on the cusp, but.
Alpha, you're our only hope. I'm raising one. At least one of them's going to be fine.
I love that. We've got one on our side.
Yeah. Maybe that's a reason to have more kids. Just like an army of children that'll vote correctly.
That's the problem, is that I feel like everybody I know who doesn't want kids should be the one raising a kid.
Exactly.
And that's the problem.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Too expensive.
Yeah. Right now. Maybe.
Yeah, they're already too expensive and they are not getting any cheaper, so.
No. I can't even imagine having to buy diapers right now. Holy shit.
I need them for myself, too. Let's see those prices and shit myself.
Oh my God. I was like, what are you talking about?
Bad joke. All right. Should we rate?
Yeah, let's rate it. How scary did you think it was?
0.5.
Okay.
This was like a romp, was it? It's unicorns. I'm not. That doesn't scare me.
They were kind of scary unicorns. They weren't like unicorns and rainbows unicorns.
Yeah, but like you just have to not try to kill them and they're fine, so.
Is that really so fucking hard?
No. What's that? How scary did you think it was?
I gave it one, because there were some, like, really prolonged jump scare lead-ups. And you want to know what...
Tension.
Yeah, you want to know what made me jump the most was, and you knew it was going to happen, was when they hit the unicorn with the car. That noise was, like, really loud and sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And it scared me. I don't know why. It was weird. But I gave it a one, just a little bump.
Okay. How sexy did you think it was?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Will Poulter's glow up is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Rudd is actually growing on me, both in personality and he's kind of hot. And then Taye Leone is also very beautiful. She's my favorite part of Ghost Town.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like the mythology and the sci-fi of it all. So I gave it a 3.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I really liked it. I'm also starting my period tomorrow. That could have something to do with it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be.
Oh
my
God.
I'm skipping it.
Oh.
I can't deal with that too. You know?
Yeah, that's fair. So fair.
Yeah. I give it a 2.
Oh, good.
So kind of semi-agree. Partially for the cast and then partially for the, you know.
Horns.
What did she say? That horn had a lot of girth to it. Is that the line she used?
Not to be a size queen.
Yeah. Also, did you ever see the like A24's website what their like their merch for this? It's a lamp that looks suspiciously like a dildo.
I think I did see it in an email, but I forgot. Which, let me look.
Yeah.
Oh, I really want it though. $125?
Yeah. It's a lamp that looks like the horn from the unicorn, but it also looks.
It doesn't have
a flared base, does it?
It does have a flared base.
It does.
It has
like
a little hook.
Oh.
Oh my God. It's like double. It's kind of.
Right. Well, safety first, everybody.
Yeah. That you don't want to get caught with that at the hospital.
No, that'd be embarrassing.
What's it made out of? It's made of molded frosted glass. And it does have a bulb in it, like an actual bulb. So please don't put this in your orifices.
Don't.
It doesn't belong there.
Nope.
It looks like it does.
It does. I think they knew what they were doing. I think they made it so that people could put it right next to their Dune popcorn bucket and just have a cute little set.
Oh.
That's what I think.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, exactly.
Interior includes... Wait, it's a fucking lava lamp.
Yeah.
Interior includes paraffin wax and tinted water. Please allow 2 to 3 hours for contents to heat.
Mm-hmm. It like glows. Like the horn.
Wow. I love that.
It is pretty cool.
And I am still a AAA 24 member, so it's $20 cheaper.
Wow. She's getting it.
Well, anyway. That's fun. How fucked up did you think it was?
I gave it a 1.
Okay.
I gave it like a little bump just because like the kills were fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't necessarily like think they were that fucked up, but like I'll give it a point because the effort was there. They were going for it. I like that.
Yeah.
What about you? Fun.
I gave it a 1.5.
Okay, yeah.
It was pretty graphic, but it was like a tone thing. I think it was a very good... They did a good job with the tone where it wasn't like out of place at all. And it was just fun. It was a romp. Very, very romp. The only one that really got me a little bit was the slow head pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. I made a noise through that entire setup. Oh, and where do you sit in a movie theater?
Am I with people? Or am I by myself?
No, just by yourself.
Oh, okay. Last row on the aisle.
Okay. Like as far back as you can?
Yeah.
On the aisle?
Yep.
Okay. I sit last row right next to where the projector is so that I can go like
this. Oh, middle.
Yeah. So I can go like this a little bit. It's not exactly the middle. It's like right to the side. So I can go like this if I need to.
What if there's other people in there, Katie?
Not if there's anybody else in there.
Oh, okay.
Nobody goes to my theater.
You block the movie for yourself sometimes?
Not when like the movie's running, but I just think it's funny to like do your little hand puppets. Anyway, but also I like hearing the projector go. I think that's kind of fun.
Mm.
When it's quiet, I like hearing it. And also I can be on my phone and nobody's behind me.
Why are you on your phone in a movie?
I'm taking notes.
Because you'll forget.
Yeah, duh.
Got it. Okay.
Duh. Well, why was I telling you about that? I was telling you about that.
I don't know. The head pop. Did you put your hand up during the head pop scene?
Oh, no, because I was making a noise, like an audible noise the whole time that was like knowing that what was about to happen. I was like, and I was in the theater alone.
Okay, good. That was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
Okay. Fun.
For my little seat in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Overall, what did you think of Death of a Unicorn?
This was a really fun movie. So fun. I was so worried that Paul Rudd was going to ruin it for me. And again, I apologize that for ever hating him. I don't know why, because now I don't hate him anymore. I like him a lot. But this movie had like everything that you could possibly want. It had mythology. It had science. It had unicorns. Amazing cast. Beautiful effects. I thought it had beautiful effects. I'll forgive some of the shitty unicorn stuff for the good unicorn stuff and like the galaxy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have that little personal connection to the tapestries, having seen them and fallen in love with them. I found the pictures. I didn't even realize I had pictures of them. I don't even know if you're allowed to take pictures in that room. But anyway, that little personal connection probably influenced my rating a little bit. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5.
Wow.
Yeah, this might be my next Saltburn because I got home and I was like, fuck, I want to fall asleep to this movie.
People were comparing it to Saltburn in some of the reviews I saw.
Why? For what reason?
Like
the rich family?
Yeah, like a kind of surface level eat the rich messaging.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, down with big pharma kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's fair. Okay, yeah. I get it. Maybe that's why I need to fall asleep, is subliminal eat the rich.
It wasn't that subliminal. It was okay.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
there was no nuance in this movie.
Not in
at
this
all.
One. It's all burn a little bit though. It's more nuanced for sure.
A little bit more, yeah.
It's not quite so fuck you, Big Pharma. At least Jenna Ortega isn't saying it out loud.
Yeah.
How about you?
You liked it. You really liked it.
I really did. I really, really did. This is, I know this isn't like an Ari Aster directed movie, but this would have been my favorite Ari Aster had he directed it.
Oh, yeah, no, he just
produced.
Yeah. Executive produced.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. I didn't like it as much as you did. I'm so sorry. I will say, though, even though I kind of agreed, after I watched this movie, I was like, all right, that was fine. Like, I didn't love it, but that's fine. And then I went to Letterboxd, and people were so annoying about it that I wanted to, like it more. Because I was like, why are you guys criticizing the fucking unicorn movie this much? Like, it's not that big of a deal. Calm down.
What are they saying about it? Just how bad it is or whatever?
Just that, like, yeah, like, the messaging is just very on the nose. Like, there's no subtlety. It's very just, like, in your face. Here's what it is. There's no nuance or anything like that. Which is fair, but also at a time when, like, media literacy is not very high, maybe sometimes people need just a direct message. Is it the smartest script ever? No, it's not. But it wasn't even that I disagreed with people saying it. They were just being so annoying. Like, why are we being that hard on a unicorn movie? It's a fucking unicorn horror movie.
Yeah, it was a great time. It had great kills. It was fun. It was a little funny. Could have been funnier, but it was funny.
Yeah. I think my major critiques, I do think that it could have had a little bit more nuance. It could have been funnier. I felt like the pacing was off. Like, this was a slog. I'm sorry.
It was like 10 minutes too long.
I think when she was like in the car the first time when the unicorns like first start attacking. And I remember thinking like, how long is this movie? Like, is this like an over 2 hour movie?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, because we're already at like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I looked at my clock and it had been like an hour 15. And yeah. I was like, oh. Okay. Never mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that pacing was a little bit of an issue for me. I really loved the kills. I thought that that was really fun. It's a unicorn movie. Like, it was a fun time. Yeah. I thought Poulter and Kerrigan were great. I just wish nobody did a bad job. I just wish it had been funnier. So yeah, overall, I gave it a 3.
Nice.
Yeah. So one of the biggest disparities we've had in a while.
I think so. Maybe even ever. A point and a half is a big disparity.
Menu had to be farther than that.
Yeah, but I re-ranked it.
That's true.
I understand it now.
Yeah.
I kind of want to watch that again.
Me too. I haven't seen it since we did that episode.
Talk about 2 years ago. Nuancing Eat the Rich. I fall asleep.
That's a great movie. Yeah, hell yeah. Let's go. All right. Would you survive?
I think so. I think if a mythical creature shows up, nobody's fucking touching that thing on my watch. That's just, yeah. It's staying alive. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. Same thing. If I relate to anybody, I relate to her character because I'm not going to kill and harvest unicorns. That's insane.
Yeah, absolutely. Bonkers. That's wild. Did we learn nothing from Harry Potter?
No, I did not. Do you want to predict next week's movie?
No.
You're going to predict next week's movie anyway?
Well, I don't know why you asked. Of course
you,
I do.
You say yes.
Of course I do.
All right, next week we're going to be talking about a movie from 2014. It's called Honeymoon.
Okay. So it's a gay couple, I hope. On their honeymoon.
One can hope.
Yeah. They're on their honeymoon. It's in Italy. Around Italy. No specific place in Italy. Just, it's an Italian honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
And they... it can't be a vampire movie. I feel like we just had a vampire movie. I don't know. This is hard. I don't know. I don't have a lot to go off of from just the word honeymoon. Who's in it?
Rose Leslie and Harry Treadaway.
Okay, so it's not a gay wedding. That's annoying.
Sorry. You can't use that to your advantage, though. It's still a gay wedding.
Okay, good. Okay, so it's still a gay wedding.
Your version?
Yeah. That Rose is attending.
Perfect.
Yeah. And she gets invited on the Italian honeymoon because she's their best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're on the honeymoon, one of the gay men is murdered because that's annoyingly always the thing that happens in gay horror movies is the gay people die. So one of the men dies, and then the other groom and the best friend, played by Rose Leslie, avenge him. And they discover that the person that killed the thing that killed the groom. It can't be a creature because we just saw one. Is a ghost. It's a ghost. It's supernatural. And yeah. They don't get revenge, but they are able to escape. The two of them are able to escape. And they don't.
Great.
They don't fall in love. There's no straight love in this movie at all.
Yeah, none.
None.
Okay, cool.
Anything?
There is a couple on their honeymoon.
Yes.
But as you inferred,
that was implied.
It's not a gay couple. Yeah. Yeah, sorry.
Very annoying.
But yeah, I think that's all I'll give you. I think it's a good one to kind of go into blind.
Great.
And I'm excited. It's actually been a while since I've seen this one, so I'm excited to revisit it.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, speaking of going into movies blind, and I had this thought while I was watching Death of a Unicorn, wouldn't it have been so fun if Death of the Unicorn was not called that and it was called something else, like Tapestries or something, and then you go in blind and it's a fucking unicorn movie? Wouldn't that have been fun?
Yeah, but these days they have to, like, market it based on what's going to draw you in. Like, Tapestries, is that going to draw people in? No. Unicorns are going to draw people in.
Well, yeah, but people would have then seen the trailer. But I generally don't watch the trailer for movies that we're going to go see. I try to avoid that completely.
As you should.
Just the title. And can you imagine, had we gone in, just the title, and it's called Tapestries, and then there's fucking unicorns.
Yeah.
That would have been a blast.
One thing I didn't say too is this movie is like violently predictable.
Oh yeah, of course.
Go back and listen to my prediction of this movie. It's the exact plot.
Yeah.
Like beat for beat.
Yeah. What did I say?
Every part. You said that the horn was going to be a bomb.
You wasn't far off. They held on to that thing and it was exploding into the universe. I wasn't far off.
At the end there, it was kind of bomb-like, but.
Yeah, they did the little thing with they crossed the horns and it was all smoking and stuff.
Yep.
We were both right. You maybe a little more than me.
How you want to see it, sure.
But no, I mean, what else is going to... I mean, the unicorn lore is that they heal people and... Yeah, no, you really did nail it. That's true. You very, very much nailed it.
All right, well, that was Death of a Unicorn. We had mixed reviews, kind of, just like audiences and critics. So I guess you guys are just going to have to watch it yourself. You're going to have to figure this out for us.
Yeah. Go in blind. Forget everything that we just said for the last hour and 20 minutes. And then go see the movie.
Yeah. If you fast forward just to hear the reviews, this is the time to watch it now. Let us know.
Oh, funny. All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Please like, subscribe, comment. What should they comment, Katie?
You already asked them to comment what American Horror Story season they need to watch.
Oh, yeah. That I need to watch.
Oh, yeah.
They know what to watch.
We'll watch it, sure. And review it.
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe?
I don't know.
If someone requests it, we will watch it.
Oh, God. Okay. Fine.
But it better not be like, ooh, I'm going to recommend they watch this one, and it's the worst one.
Yeah, it's Freak Show, and then I say no.
Don't do that.
Don't put me through that, please.
It has to be one that we haven't seen.
Yeah. Even though the one episode we did on American Horror Story was one that we had both already seen.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's the good one.
That's because we're liars and frauds. Anyways, thanks so much for listening again. We appreciate it. Tell us what you thought of Death of a Unicorn. And we'll see you next week for Honeymoon.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.